You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Listening to the Red Seat Podcast.
Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux.
It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied. David Ortiz.
Featuring Keaton DeRocher and Bob Osgood.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Big play. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World.
Welcome back to the Red Seat Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux. Today I'm joined by Keaton DeRocher and Bob Osgood of Over the Monster for episode 310 of the show. As always, if you want to send us questions, you can email us at redseatpodcast@gmail.com. We've got a great show ahead for you tonight. We have a lot of roster stuff to talk about as the team is winding down spring training and we're just 8 days away from the start of the season, just 7 days as you're listening to this podcast. But gentlemen, I've been a little lax on my formalities I guess my formalities lately. So how you guys doing? I'm going to really
go to
ask
Keaton.
You
he was most
yourself,
upset about so. That.
Yeah. Keaton, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing so good, Jake, now that you remembered you have co-hosts on this show.
What did you have for dinner tonight, Keaton?
Oh, I made a little spicy Thai coconut curry soup.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That sounds quite good. I'm happy
half
I asked that question.
Still in front of me.
Okay, are you going to loudly slurp it on the podcast for everybody to hear?
Well, I was going to do it while I was on mute, but if you'd like to hear it, I definitely can.
All right. Are you slinging any of those high-end cocktails that you were showing us recently?
Not right now. I'm drinking a water with it because it's right. Spicy.
I hear just straight vodka is good for spicy stuff.
I feel like you're lying to me.
I am. All right. Bob, how you doing, man?
Doing great, Jake. We got... what, first, second day of spring? We got March Madness starting on Thursday. We got opening day in a week. I'm fired up. The mood is finally turning. Maybe I'll actually throw some Red Sox optimism out there this week.
Okay. And, Bob, how are you dealing with the fact that your interpreter just got bagged for stealing $4.5 million bucks from your bank account?
Yeah, I've got a lot of cynical text messages about Fall Guys and everything else, and I think I just won't go there and give any opinion until I've read anything about this.
I am surprised that he even noticed $4 million missing, given his contract.
Well, the rest of it's all deferred. Yeah,
he deferred it all.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true.
Might have been his entire bank account.
All right, well, let's get into it. As we wind down spring training, we're going to take a look at our roster projection for the 2024 season. You know, the thing that is unique about this exercise for this year is that all three of us were pretty much in agreement about what the roster is going to look like on opening day. There are little things that we could quibble with, and we'll talk about some of those things, but by and large, we're just going to run down what we think the roster is going to look like on opening day. So at catcher, we think it's going to be Connor Wong and Reese McGuire. At first base, Tristan Casas and CJ Krohn. At second base, Enmanuel Valdez and Pablo Reyes. Shortstop, Trevor Story. Third base, Rafael Devers. Left field, Jaron Duran. Center field, Sedan Rafaela. Right field, Tyler O'Neill and Willier Abreu. DH, we have Masataka Yoshida. And on the pitching side of things, we have SP1 and opening day starter, Brian Bello. SP2 is going to be Nick Pivetta. SP3, Cutter Crawford. SP4, Tanner Houck. And SP5, Garrett Whitlock. And then in the bullpen, we've got Kenley Jansen closing out the games. Chris Martin and Josh Winkowski as the setup guys. The lone lefty in the bullpen breaking the year with the team is going to be Brennan Bernardino. And then middle relievers, we have Isaiah Campbell, Justin Slayton, and Greg Weissert. And for long relief, we have Cooper Criswell. So, since you guys don't have anything different, I'm going to start with you here, Bob. Where do you feel like the Red Sox are most vulnerable with this roster?
I would say it's second base, and I think that that's the one area that, you know, if I could see something slightly different happening there, and I might have been able to make a better case for it a week ago before Rob Refsnyder's injury with the broken toe, and it just seems a lot more likely now that both Rafaela and Abreu make the team as the fourth and fifth outfielders. But you know, with Enmanuel Valdez hitting 167, not really in spring training, I should say, not really being the best defensive player, I could see a scenario where they try to use Rafael at second base. And it's not like it's taking some experiment at a position that he hasn't played before. You know, I mean, he is an elite outfield defensive player, but by all accounts, he plays a solid infield, even if that's been more at short than it has been at second. And the more I'm reading, it sounds like Von Grissom's going to miss closer to a month. So if you're trying to get your best roster out on the field and have your best defensive players out there, it's possible that Rafaela at second makes more sense. It made a little more sense with Refsnyder around because now you'd be kind of opening up a spot. Now you have to find a fifth outfielder to fill in there, but that's kind of doable. I'm more worried about the starting second baseman, and maybe that's Pablo Reyes, maybe that's a combination of Reyes and Valdez, but with the start that Rafael has had, I don't know. I don't think it's the worst idea. I've been selling myself on it more now that I don't think it's just going to be the first 4 to 6 days that Grissom is going to be out in the infield. So I feel like that's where they're putting themselves most at risk.
Yeah, and Valdez and Reyes have both had really bad springs. Both have slash lines with, you know, pretty uninspiring numbers. Valdez was, as of Monday, it was 161, 235, 452. And Reyes was 148, 351, 259. So not exactly what you want to see from those guys. In your scenario, though, when Rafaela does play second base, I think one of the things they could do is play Jaron Duran, or I should say Masataka Yoshida in left field, too, if they needed an extra outfielder. It seems like they're not completely closed off to that idea. Keaton, on the flip side of things, where do you feel like the Red Sox have the most depth on this roster?
I think it's outfield. Bob kind of talked about a lot of those options there, with the five outfielders kind of prepped to make the roster. Could also, I mean, not the best defensive option, but Yoshida obviously could also get out there in the outfield too. So they have plenty of options to kind of mess around with the roster and fit those guys into place. One thing that I hesitate to jump fully into comparisons to last year, but last year started the same way at second base with Trevor Story, thinking he was going to be only going to miss a couple days, and then it turned into a month, and it turned into many, many months with the team doing nothing to address it. So two questions for you guys. Are you afraid that'll happen again with Grissom, and how much time do you think Grissom would have to miss before they actually do something to address the position? Or do you think they're just going to ride it out with whoever they have until he's back?
I am not super concerned, given that Grissom is a young guy and it's a hamstring. So I think that he'll be ready sooner rather than later. You know, that's just my gut feeling about the situation. I don't think it'll snowball like the Trevor Story thing. But, you know, if it does, for whatever reason, I think a name that we need to start talking about is Nick York, who really doesn't have, you know, a ton left to prove in the minor leagues. And his swing has looked really good. He looked great the breakout game. Spring breakout game. I like his swing a lot, so I think that that's a guy who could provide better offensive production than either of the two who are currently on the team.
I mean, I have a slight level of concern, and that's why I'm saying that if it's closer to a month with Grissom, then I think that's why you need to do something a little bit more aggressive with Rafaela, because we know that they're probably, I mean, they've had a lot of opportunities to sign one-year right-handed DH type of bats, and it doesn't seem like they're going to do that, as we've now seen Adam Duvall go off for $3 million to Atlanta. I mean, geez, it just seemed like that was a fit, right? If you throw $4 or $5 million, I don't know, have one more bat, and then, Jake, as you said, you can put Yoshida into left field in the scenario that I'm outlining there, and have a guy like Duvall at DH. Now you do have CJ Cron, who, if Cassis is playing first base every day, Cron might be a designated hitter against lefties, or if he's going well, maybe that's, if he gets hot, that could be someone that can play a little bit more, but you don't really want to rely on that. And I still thought that there would be, as I don't know, probably hopeless as it should have been, I thought that they would bring in one more bench bat beyond Cron, but they haven't done that yet.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Yeah, I think we've all been a little disappointed with how the offseason has gone, and it's a little bit unexpected there. I will say that one other area that I've been impressed with their depth is at right-handed reliever, especially with the camp that Justin Hagenman had this year. The skill level of Luis Guerrero, who's there. Zach Kelly is also back. I have all three of those guys not making the team because Greg Weissert has also looked really good, and Justin Slayton's looked good, and Isaiah Campbell. I like the amount of firepower that they have in relief, and I hope that one of the things that they don't do this year that they did in past years when Bloom was in charge is hesitate to switch these guys out. you know, especially the guys who have options. I felt like in the Bloom years, they were hesitant to option guys and bring other guys up and try some things. And I think that we should see all three of these guys at different points this year as guys either get injured or ineffective.
Yeah, I mean, there are relief pitchers that are designated for assignment or available via trade because of that throughout the season, because other teams are churning and burning those spots, and they weren't really agreeable to do that between like a Caleb Ort or your boy Yovera. There was just a lot of the same names that we were seeing while they were really kind of having a tight window with the 40-man roster there on numerous occasions last year. So I agree, if these aren't working and they're in a, if they are a competitive team, hopefully into June and July, you'd like to see them kind of churn that as they can. And I think that, you know, a couple of months ago when they guaranteed deals before the Shriver trade, we were saying, you know, Slayton is Rule 5 and Mata before the injury was out of options and Criswell was signed to a major league contract. And it was like, geez, there's a lot of names that are in the mix here that are almost kind of guaranteed a spot, because of course you're going to have Jansen and Martin and Winkowski. And it seemed at that point, either Hauk or Whitlock would be in the bullpen because this was before the Giolito injury. And it was hard to see how this would fit into place, but then spring training starts and injuries always happen. And just look at the Cincinnati Reds, who went from 11 hitters that were all starters down to 7 or 8 in about a week. And, you know, now we're, as we're going to talk about a little bit with Jansen and Martin, and then you've got Mata on the injured list, and these 8 relievers have kind of all fallen into place when all was said and done. So it turned out to be good that they had that depth at that position.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think to that point, that's a good segue. Kenley Jansen and Chris Martin seem like they both could be available for opening day. Jansen was, you know, scratched from yesterday's game with some back soreness. He's only thrown one inning. But in the event that Jansen or Chris Martin, who are both, you know, over 35 at this point, have to miss time, you have to feel pretty good about the fact that you can just have Hagenman and Zach Kelly come up into those spots, and Luis Guerrero throws 100 too. So, you know, that's not a bad thing. But, you know, Keaton, what's your worry level about Jansen and Martin? Clearly the two best relievers in the bullpen last year.
Yeah, pretty worried about Jansen. Pitchers and backs, injured backs, don't really tend to work out very well. A lot of those injuries tend to linger and be a real pain to take a really long time to heal. So that Jansen, I'm actually pretty worried about. Hopefully it is something minor and it's something you can come back with. But I feel like anytime pitcher's got a messed up back and it feels like a re-aggravation, it doesn't make you feel great about the recovery. But pretty confident in Chris Martin, though, especially yesterday. He was throwing against minor league hitters and looked great, was up to 96 with his velocity. It looks like he's going to be A-okay to start the year on the roster, which is great news. So much less concerned with him than Jansen, but pretty concerned with Jansen and his ability to. I think the latest update was that he might miss a few days into the season and be able to come back really early, but I'm worried about that ability and how much he'll actually pitch this year.
Yeah. Definitely a fair worry. Backs are no good when they start barking at you. Bob, you said at the top of the show that you think that the Red Sox are most vulnerable at second base. I was a little surprised you didn't say at starting pitcher, because to me, looking at this rotation, it just scares the hell out of me. You know, the fact that Hauk has had his problems, you know, Garrett Whitlock's had health issues in the past, Pivetta is, as Keaton calls him, Poopvetta. You know, a lot of these guys have huge question marks. And then when we look down at the depth chart at starter, you know, you're talking about two guys who are already going to break camp as one of the 13 pitchers in Winkowski and Criswell. So you're kind of robbing your bullpen if you use either of those guys in the rotation. And then the only other guy really available is Richard Fitz, as a starting pitcher. So to me, they're just incredibly vulnerable there. You're taking five guys who already have plenty of question marks and then three more guys who, you know, you're already kind of relying on in different roles. So it's pretty scary. What are your thoughts on the rotation?
Yeah, I decided not to hammer that home after I spent about 15 minutes on a soliloquy the last time we were talking about the Red Sox when Giolito got hurt. So I let you take that one, but it's hard to disagree with you. Grissom was kind of with hearing that he's not going to really be close to opening day in recent days kind of worried me a little bit when I saw the Valdez and the Reyes and the Willier Abreu numbers of some of these players that, I mean, it's great that Rafael has stepped up in spring training. I don't really look a ton at spring training stats for the veterans, but for your Valdez and Reyes and Rafael and Abreu types who are fighting for positions on the team and then now kind of being thrust into a starting role, I look a little bit more at that, where you don't think that they're working on things. You're going to get their best because they're trying to make the team. So that's why I settled on second base, but I have to agree with you. I'm encouraged by what we've seen from Whitlock, that he's been able to go out every 5 or 6 days and has increased his innings count each time, and his velocity is back where it's been at peak Whitlock. So I am cautiously optimistic with him. I mean, you know, of course I've been an advocate for him in the rotation all along if there are not other arms that are there, but at the same time, you know, even if he throws 6, 7, 8 starts to begin the season, he did that last year and his elbow started barking. But, you know, it's good to see that he's pitching well. In terms of Pivetta, who knows? Again, it's spring training, but he's up into 75 pitches. He looked really good in his outing on Monday or Tuesday of this week. Bayo, they feel good about with the medicals to sign him to the extension and give him the ball on opening day. So, you know, it's good that these five are all healthy and throwing and on track, because you can't say that for so many teams around the league. And this could turn tomorrow when someone's arm starts barking, but I'm just glad that all five of them are out there and on track to start the first five games of the year, because a year ago we couldn't figure out 2 or 3 names out of 7 when we were talking about Sale and Paxton, and Bayo had a forearm, and there was a lot of question marks a year ago. So I'm just glad they're healthy.
How many turns through the rotation before someone other than these five starts a game?
Two? 28.
Like the third time through, it's like 28 turns?
Damn.
Yep.
There's that optimist Jake out there throwing us off.
What was that 2013 team or something that they only had like 5 starts that weren't from the main 5 guys?
Yeah, that was the John Lackey comeback season.
Felix Dubron.
Yeah, those were good times. So I want to move on to talking about Richard Fitz a little bit. I know that we talked about him as sort of that one dark horse option to start for the Red Sox at some point this year if they do have injuries. But I got a chance to watch him for, I guess, 3 innings in the spring breakout game. And I really liked the look of his stuff. You know, he also had a great quote. I don't know if either of you guys caught the game or saw his quote, but he was talking about, you know, carrying his velocity on his four-seamer a little bit later into games, and asked what he had done to kind of do that and, you know, part of his training. And he mentioned that he trains with Criswell and Whitlock in the off season. But he also said that he has bulked up a little bit. And he said, mass equals gas. which I thought was a real good quote from our boy Dickie Fitz. And he also talked about his new grip on his changeup too, and how he's really liked the way that that's felt. So yeah, I don't know. I think that he is a starter. I'm pretty convinced of it. I like him a lot. You know, I don't think that Fitz is going to end up being like a 1-3 starter or anything like that, but I think he could end up being a pretty solid back end guy. So am I too optimistic about Dick Fitz?
Yeah.
No, I love that he threw 153 innings a year ago. Like, that's a solid number to be working off of. And the year before that, 112. So he went from 112 to 153. And as you said, you know, he's got a third pitch that he's got two decent pitches and a third pitch he's working on. I don't think that you're saying that he's going to be, you know, breaking the door down and dominate or anything like that. It's a 4-5 starter that you're looking at. And they kind of need that, assuming that someone's going to get hurt at some point. They are going to need that. They also need an ace and chose not to do anything about that. But they've lost Giolito. They've traded Sale. Criswell is an option, both in the bullpen and the rotation. And there's Fitz. And then what's after that?
Wickelman, so, Gonzalez.
Right, yeah. If then you're looking at the prospects plate. who are a couple of years away. Between him and Monegro and Perales, there's no way that any of those guys are making a start this year unless something crazy happens. And yeah, Mata can't stay on the field. So, yeah, we're already, that's my concern, is that we're already talking about a lack of depth with the Giolito, beyond the you know, the concerns that I have is Giolito to get back to his front of the rotation arm that he was 3 years ago. That was such a key loss for innings. And yeah, what would you say the over under is for Fitz starts? Because I think it's probably like at least 12.
Ooh, 12 feels a little high to me.
Okay.
I would have said like 10.
I was way off.
Yeah. I don't know. I would have said 10 is the high end.
I'm going to leave now.
No, I'll take the under. I'll take the under okay. on that.
I'm just trying to figure out who else it would be. I mean, it could be 12 from Criswell and 12 from Fitz. And if you have two injuries, I don't know where you're going. You're out on the scrap heap again.
You know who it could be? It could be Jordan Montgomery.
He is still available.
Yeah, and apparently about to sign with the Yankees, so that'll rub.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Great. Jake, I mean, my knee-jerk reaction is just to say you're always optimistic, too optimistic. But in context, you're like, pegging him as a fourth, fifth starter, that's pretty fair. That's not overly optimistic. So I apologize to you.
Well, thanks, man. And you know what you're going to like about this guy? I don't know if you've actually got to see him, but you could slap Richard Fitz's picture on a baseball card from like 1972, and he would 100% fit in. He just looks like a pitcher.
He's going to be on that Super 70 Sports account as somebody that...
I mean, the name, too.
Right.
It's like a very 70s name.
He's fantastic. I love looking at him. He's just he's a joy. So I'm very happy that he ended up on the Red Sox. And apparently, also a cool thing, he was with Whitlock at a holiday party when he got the news that he was traded to the Red Sox. So that's pretty cool.
I like that. The only other name that I don't think we mentioned was I'm gonna butcher his name, but I think it's Lucas Lutke or Letke or something like that. He's a left-handed arm that I don't think he's on the 40. But if Jansen, you know, he's, what, 30, 36. But he's like one of those left-handers that just goes out and gets 50 to 60 appearances back in the before they changed it to the three pitcher minimum. But in 2022, he had 50 appearances with New York at a 2.67 ERA. So that was just 2 years ago. And then he was dreadful with Atlanta last year. But he's been decent in camp, and I just feel like, you know, who's your second arm? As I think that Joe Jakes got sent down. Jakes is a possibility. Lettke is another one that, you know, I've just kind of seen that name pop up, and he has decent numbers in the spring.
Yeah, and while we're talking about lefties, I think we have to mention, you know, the depth that is there aside from Jakes in Lutke, or however you say it. Jorge Benitez is a guy who Alex Cora really likes. He's got options, so he'll probably be sent down. Jolly Rodriguez, I'd be surprised if he sticks around, especially if he doesn't make the club. And Chris Murphy was diagnosed with severe UCL damage today. So it looks like that is going to be a Tommy John coming up. It's not officially announced or anything, but the lefty depth there is not quite as good as their right-handed depth.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate with Murphy, because I know that we were all pulling for him, and he ended up getting a ton of innings last year during the tough days. Joely is important, I think, to bring up, because they did give him some money a year ago, and he basically missed the whole year hurt. So it's kind of down to health with him, and if he is healthy, he's 31. They gave him money because he had two decent seasons in a row with the Mets. I think that it's possible that we could see that name in the mix if, you know, give him a fresh start, but not someone you want to count on.
What about Cam Boozer? He's a lefty. This is a name who has come up. He was completely out of baseball, you know, was basically, you know, doing like throwing camps and stuff like that, and has come back, and he's touching 99 from the left side. Interesting guy, almost 32 years old. Got an NRI. I mean, that would not shock me if he is this year's Brennan Bernardino.
32 and doesn't look like he's made an MLB appearance yet. So, all right, I'll file that away and root for that guy.
Yeah, that's my deep cut for today.
All right, I like it.
All right, let's get to Dahlbeck versus Crone. You know, we all agree that Crone is going to win this job. You know, Keaton, what happens to Dahlbeck? It seems like he does have another option, so the Red Sox can continue to send him down to Worcester. I think Dahlbeck's seen more of Worcester than he ever would like to see in his life. Feels like a big time change of scenery guy, but they don't have to do anything to add Crone to the roster, because Lucas Giolito has yet to be put on the 60-day IL. So, you know, I really thought this was the year that Dahlbeck in that situation would be resolved, but it seems like the Red Sox might be content to just kick this can down the road a little bit more.
Yeah, he's going to go down to AAA. He's going to do very well. And people are going to be like, hey, maybe we could use him. He'll probably get a little stint there on the bench, do very poorly, and then I suppose that would be it, right? You couldn't go back. and they just DFA him, and someone else picks him up, and then he becomes a rando on some other team.
He has felt like the most Oakland A's player ever for like 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, he does have an option left, so they can use that the whole year, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen. He's going to, I mean, he had video game numbers at AAA last year, so he'll probably do that again. And as Keaton said, get called up and it won't go too well, and be a backup at a couple of different positions. And I don't know. I think that we, outside of that incredible 2 months he had at the end of 2021, which we're getting further away from at this point, that kind of know who Dahlbeck is.
Yeah. Have either of you guys been to the Worcester Park?
Yes.
Nope. Beautiful.
Good.
Love that
food
place.
And beer selections.
Yeah.
I haven't been to Worcester in 12 years.
Oh, man, we got to fix that. Next time you're on the Eastern Seaboard here, we're bringing you to Worcester.
I don't know if I will. Well, yeah, it'd be like Christmas time.
Well, then maybe we won't. But, you know, at some point we'll get you to Worcester.
Yeah.
All right, so I want to talk about the most exciting thing about this roster, in my opinion. It is Rafaela making the team. You know, he's making the team somewhat due to the circumstances, but also he played his ass off in the spring. Slash line for him, 277, 333, 574 with three home runs, two stolen bases, and a 7.8% walk rate, a 135 WRC plus over 18 games. He also cranked a monster home run in the breakout game, had a crazy outfield assist where he caught the ball and on the run basically made like a shortstop type throw to second base to get the runner. You know, guy just played incredible. And I know with Ref Sider going on the IL with the broken toe, it kind of made this a lock, but his play has been so different this spring than Abreu, who's been really bad. He's slashed 152, 291, 348 with a 73 WRC plus over 20 games. So in the event that, you know, Ref Snyder hadn't broken his toe, I think Rafaela made a pretty damn good case for him to stay on this roster, even over Abreu. So I'm just curious what you guys read into these two spring performances, considering, you know, one of the things we've harped on with Rafaela, and everybody's harped on this, is, you know, he has to be more selective and while maintaining that telltale aggression that he has. And we've really seen that, whereas we haven't really seen a lot from Abreu this spring.
I think it's kind of we go through the cycle every year, right, with do we read too much into any spring training performance, positive or negative? And it's hard not to, but sometimes guys are just slow starters, especially guys that are young and still kind of figuring it out. So I don't know how much I buy into Abreu's thinker, but it's hard not to buy into what Rafael is doing and kind of think of the potential with him in the outfield, or as Bob said at second, just him getting playing time somewhere and getting at bats and kind of being like a young force to jolt some life into this roster. It's hard not to feel like that is kind of come to fruition, but trying to temper expectations, but yeah, it's hard. It's really hard not to be excited by it.
Yeah. I agree with pretty much everything Keaton said there. I mean, like, I'm not going to overreact to 18 to 20 spring training games for either guy, specifically Abreu, because we got a nice 28 game sample in the major leagues last year where Abreu had a 135 WRC plus. So he could be working things out, but it is fair to have two prospects and one starting spot available and battling that out. And Rafaela has taken that in every way possible, offensively, defensively, stealing bases. And, you know, last year, the K rate in a limited sample as well was 32%. It's down to 23% in spring training. So that's a good sign. He's putting the ball in play. He's hitting the ball hard. He's playing good defense. He's versatile. He's doing everything that you could ask him to do to make the roster at this point. So, yeah, he has to be on there. He probably would have been on there even without the Ref Snyder injury. And, you know, you talk about prospect pedigree. This is somebody that for close to 3 years now has been a really high ranked on all of our rankings that we read prospect. And it's starting to all come together. We'll see what happens in April in real games. But, yeah, what more can you ask for here?
Yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say out of every single player who's on the Red Sox roster, there's no one I'm more excited to watch this year than Rafaela, just because I love the style of game that he plays. I love how he impacts the game defensively, the kind of swag that he has. I love that he's a small guy too. You know, Bob, he's like, you know, probably our height, or, you know, even shorter. And he's just the way that he impacts the baseball at that size, the way that he anticipates plays. I'm just rooting for the guy. He's such a throwback style of player. He plays the game very instinctively. You know, just, I love watching him play. So I'm just super excited to be able to see him out there every night. And I know that we're not expecting a ton from this Red Sox season, you know, in terms of the standings or anything, but there are plenty of reasons on this roster to tune in every night. And he might be the biggest one for me.
I think one thing that I want to add, Jake, is like a month, maybe more, that we did the projections, and we didn't talk about Rafaela because there weren't many projections for him. We didn't know if he was going to make the team. If he was, he was going to be a fifth outfielder. But I remember on that, I had looked at Zips, because Zips kind of says if they are going to get full playing time, what is that going to you know, carry out to? And we had put into that that he had 130 games. If he had played that he would hit 261 with 15 homers, 76 RBIs, and 20 steals. And now that we're kind of increasing his playing time, if you look on his Fangraphs page, you see the Bat X, and you see Steamer, and you see all of them with an average between 255 and 260, and they're all, you know, some are closer to 10 homers, but most are around 15 and closer to 20 stolen bases. And, you know, you're talking about projections, these are 50% outcomes, but it's interesting, you know, that with the young players, sometimes this can be slow to catch up, and he has pretty solid projections across the board at this point. So I think that's interesting.
Is he a dark horse candidate for Rookie of the Year?
I think dark horse is a good way of putting it, yeah. Especially if he plays phenomenal outfield defense. Like, hey, gold glove caliber defense from the start, right? Like, you can't quantify that compared to how Evan Carter and Wyatt Langford are going to hit, but we're not talking about fantasy, we're talking about real life, and you're going to have to put defense into that.
That's the thing, like, Langford is going to be playing, what, left field? Or DHing? So, Langford's going to have to, you know, hit his ass off, which he's absolutely capable of, but Sedan Rafaela could go, you know, 20-20, and if he plays league best defense, you know, he might end up with a higher WAR than any of these guys.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Might be a good little bet to put on if anybody's headed to the casino. You know, throw a couple bucks on Sedan Rafaela for Rookie of the Year.
Or just open your phone for 10 seconds.
No, if you don't, only if you're placing bets on Rafael, you got to go all the way to the casino.
You have to go to the casino.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Keaton, you know me and technology. You know I am actually going to go to the casino if I want to make a bet. There's absolutely 100%. No way I'm getting an app on my phone.
Can I get a printout? Where are the printouts?
I'm going to hold on to the ticket. Like, I'm gonna literally put that in, like, my my end table, you know, for the whole year. Yeah. Yeah, that's me. I am 100 years old. All right. So I'm going to ask you guys to overreact positively or negatively to any of these guys. So on the positive side, Jaron Duran, Tyler O'Neill, Trevor Story, Connor Wong has had an insane spring, and Rafael Devers. They've all been amazing. Whereas Casas, Valdez, Maguire, Reyes have all been terrible. Any of those guys you are overreacting to positively or negatively, Keaton?
Jaron Duran, which I'm sure is who you expected my answer to be here. Feels like a really strong statement. I think we talked in the beginning of the offseason how it seemed like coming into spring training, he was kind of the odd man out in the outfield, and they were kind of already handing it out to the other guys there on the roster, and he was really going to have to basically like fight his way for a spot on the roster, even as the fourth outfield in a bench role. But he's really kind of silenced all that. He's going to maybe, due to some injury help, be an everyday outfielder for this team and get plenty of at-bats. And I think it feels like, I mean, the strikeouts are the biggest thing. He did a lot of work on improving that last year to be the lowest that he's ever had at the major league level, at 25%. And in spring training, he's cut that another 10% to 15. I don't expect it to be that low, but I just keep coming back to, he was always able to figure out, you know, every level of hitting he was at when he had the at-bats to do so. And it feels like he's doing the same thing at the major league level. So yeah, I'm going to overreact to that and say he's going to repeat what he did last year, hopefully a little bit healthier and with close to average defense, and he'll have an exciting year.
I kind of love that call because he has looked awesome in the spring. He looks confident. So yeah. And he seems to be saying the right things too. So hopefully he has a huge year. How about you, Bob? Anybody you're reacting to strongly, positively or negatively?
I'm going to go with Trevor Story. I mean, the short answer is no. With the veterans, I don't really care much what they look like in the preseason, but I just think that this guy needs to have a consistent March where he's getting his at-bats and he is healthy and just a normal offseason, right? Like 2 years ago, he signed around now, and last year he was coming off of a surgery, and then, you know, in the first season there was more choppiness when the season started with paternity leave and food poisoning, and it was just totally inconsistent and choppy. And this year he's healthy, he's hitting .324, he has a couple of bombs. His strikeout rate is somewhat reasonable. I mean, this is a guy that's the last two seasons has struck out 32% of the time. And in his career before that, it was more in like the 26% range and could not hit curveballs a year ago. So it's important to just see that he's hitting for average, he's taking his walks, he has a couple of bombs, and he's just out there. And, you know, for somebody who has 2 years left, is he going to opt out after those 2 years? He needs to have two big seasons to do that. And if not, we're looking at someone that's here for 4 years and $100 million. Like, that's what's probably remaining on Trevor Story's contract. And he is, along with Tyler O'Neill, really the only two right-handed hitting power guys that they have. And they're both going to be probably in the top five of the lineup. So it's just so important for him to be on the field and to have consistent bats. And, you know, he's also hitting the ball well on top of all of that.
Yeah, that's a great one. He's extremely important. If you can get all of these question mark guys like Duran and Story and all these other dudes all having good years, it could be a very surprising season. Before we wrap up this section, I just need the world to know that Connor Wong has played 12 games. He has 13 hits in those 12 games, and he's got a slash line of .433, .469, .833 with a .240 WRC+. So
I would take that this year.
Connor Wong for MVP.
I mean, by my math, that's more than one hit per game. That's pretty
good. That is ridiculous. So hopefully, you know, Connor Wong can stay on this heater for another 6 months.
He had about, what was it, 6 weeks there where he was doing that last season, and then it fell off. So, you know, maybe he's streaky, or maybe he can keep that up for half a season this year.
Yeah, I like him. All right, well, let's get to some listener questions. We have a first question from Patty O'D, who sent this last week, but we were hard up with the NL preview. So he said, after the 2019 season, it seemed like the idea from FSG was to do a soft reset with the roster, with the centerpiece being the Mookie trade and completely punting on 2020. After that, they would try to be in contention for the wild card with a Rays-like roster churn, Bloom working intelligently within the edges of the roster, which obviously didn't happen. I'm assuming the idea was to be a fringe playoff team until a new core emerged. My contention is that half-assing everything only delayed the rebuild, especially since Henry doesn't want to invest in the Major League roster. Fan apathy has reached maybe the highest level of my lifetime, but if Bloom had sold at the deadline in 2022 and 2023, we at least would have had a few more young players to look forward to. I think the apathy would be less, and we'd be further ahead on the timetable of the rebuild. Hard to disagree with anything that he's said so far. He says, finally, my question. Given that leadership wanted to stupidly move on from the 2018 core, wouldn't the best course of action have been to do a hard reset of the roster and lean full into a rebuild? Also, given that we know that FSG probably handcuffed Bloom with budget limitations, does this make you look at his time more positively? I still think he did a poor job not selling in 2022 or 23 in the Story contract and not developing notable minor league pitching, but I'm interested in your takes. Thanks, you guys are great. Can't wait for baseball, but maybe not Red Sox baseball. Patio D. So yeah, it's a great question. I think we should address the first part here, whether or not going for a hard reset after 2018 would have been the right move. Keaton, what do you think about that part?
Oh, I am so glad you started with me, Jake. So, I mean, I know the question is focused on whether it should have been a hard or a soft restart, but the correct answer is it shouldn't have been a restart at all. They already had the next core on the team. Xander Bogaerts was 26. Rafael Devers was 22. Mookie Betts was 26. Christian Vasquez was 28. Eduardo Rodriguez was 26. You already had the next young core on the team for the next decade. Andrew Benintendi, 24. And you just got rid of all of them. That there shouldn't, it shouldn't even have been a question about whether to reset or not. You had the young core on the team already that you should have then focused building around the fringes with that core that was already there. There was no point at all into blowing it up and getting rid of it just because they had won a World Series and they wanted to ride the good graces and try and save millions of dollars by not spending on a competitive team. The next core was already here on the Major League roster.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Keaton. And that was my feeling when it was happening at the time. I always thought that they should have invested heavily into Mookie Betts and Xander Bogaerts and then figured out the rest later. Even if that meant there were a couple of years where you were going to have to exceed the luxury tax and pay some of those penalties. Those penalties, when you really look at them, are not that big of a penalty, especially to a billionaire. So I just don't think it was worth trading the best right fielder in team history and arguably the best shortstop in team history for letting him walk for what amounted to be probably like an $11 million penalty for a couple of years. It's like ridiculous. So that is the right answer. I think you didn't have to keep all those guys. Like maybe you decide to commit to Xander and Mookie and let Devers play out his rookie contract or, you know, not pay Benintendi. But absolutely, like, that was the move. So I'm glad you answered that way.
Yeah, I mean, sorry.
Just one really important point on this. So like you said, you didn't have to invest in all of them because any way you can get a 23-year-old Michael Chavis or a 27-year-old Blake Swihart more playing time, I would definitely go with it.
The thing is, I'm reading this question as Patty is saying that this was, they stupidly moved on from the 2018 core, that I think he agrees that that was a dumb move that they had the core. But once they made that decision, once we got to 2020 and beyond, now we're in year five of the rebuild. Shouldn't they have leaned into this a little more and not pretended that they were competing? Because that's really what they've done, is they kept kicking the can down the road year after year and be like, oh, it's next year. Oh, it's next year. Oh, we're waiting for the three big prospects. So they now that we know, I mean, this is how I felt at the trade deadline, but I didn't know how cheap they were going to be in the last two off seasons. They should have sold, right? Like, they should have leaned into this. They should have sold these veterans and not bought and sold and went and got Tommy Pham and Reese McGuire and reshuffled. Like, they never picked a lane. They didn't lean into it, and that was what they haven't done the last couple of years. They probably would be turning the corner this year if they had recognized this 2 years ago. And that's more how I'm reading this, is that, like, we all think it was stupid that they didn't build around that, and that is the right answer. But it was like this, well, we don't want to talk about bridge years. We don't want ticket sales to go down. So let's sign Garrett Richards and Martin Perez and Corey Kluber and pretend we're trying.
Yeah, it was the most cowardly course of action that they took. You know, the thing that stands out to me about ownership is that they were too afraid of the fans' reaction to actually say they were doing a rebuild.
Right.
And they were not afraid enough of the fans' reaction to, like, go out and spend money. You know, they didn't do either of those things. They just stayed right in the middle lane where nothing good happens to a baseball team. So, yeah, everything about it was horrible. And I'm glad you addressed that part of it, Bob, because I think that you're absolutely right that Patty O'D agrees with us. But the second part, you know, I'll tackle this because I've written a lot about Bloom and thought too much. He's taken up way too much real estate in my brain over the last 5 years. So I'm very happy to be unburdened from this. But I still do look at what he did here during his time as really underwhelming. You know, I think he committed to the wrong guy in Trevor Story. I think he really bungled the Bogaerts situation horribly. And I, like Mora, who wrote about this on our site, I share some concerns that, you know, Rafael Devers, out of the three guys who you chose to commit to, was the wrong one of the three. I think that there's a legitimate chance he is, like, just that three war type player going forward because of the defensive limitations. And I haven't been really impressed with a lot of Bloom's drafts. You know, I know that we can sit here and talk about how much he has to do with that. And, you know, probably the answer is he probably doesn't have a ton to do with that. But, you know, Nick York being picked where he was wasn't spectacular. I think Marcelo Mayer fell into his lap. You know, I love the Roman Anthony pick. But again, I don't really attribute a ton of that draft stuff positively or negatively to Bloom. So to me, the way that he handled the roster as a whole over those years was incredibly underwhelming.
What percent reprieve do you give Bloom with what you know now compared to 7 months ago?
None.
Keaton's right. I really don't give him any because I don't think that even if he had the money that he would have been adept enough to pick a lane and commit to it and spend aggressively. He wasn't an aggressive individual, no aggressive bones in that body, no competitiveness. So to me, he was just not cut out for this job.
All right. I agree. But I'm going to say 10%. That I'm 10% less offended by Chaim Bloom's efforts today than I was 7 months ago, seeing what Craig Breslow was given to work with this offseason.
I am going to take the opposite tact. I am challenging Bloom to a fist fight. So if you are still in the Boston area,
he's 10% more offended than he was seven months ago.
No,
if you want to meet up, I will fist fight you.
St. Louis scooped him up, didn't he? Didn't they?
Yeah, but he's working remote. So, you know, meet me at the park, Bloom.
Meet me in Temecula?
Yeah. All right. And the last question tonight comes from TJ McPhee. He says, good evening, Bob and co. I guess, Keaton, we're in co.
Oh, I responded to his prior email. I shouldn't. You respond to what I've written.
With Grissom down.
Sorry, TJ. Jake and the listeners.
With Grissom down, what are you guys' thoughts on Rafael playing some second base to begin the year with an effort to get all the outfielders more playing time? Thanks, TJ. You know, I think we're all pretty much open to that idea. Anything that makes the best roster on the field, and if that's fitting Sedan's bat at second base while playing Willier Abreu in the field more. That's great. I don't have an issue.
Yeah, I jumped the gun. I should have waited for this question, and I should have cut out the intro.
I feel like you did all of that on purpose.
Yes. I am behind the scenes trying to take this entire operation over.
Bob and Co. sounds like the name of a jam band. All right. Well, that's it for today's show, guys. Any closing thoughts before we get out of here?
I was thinking Bob and Co. sounded more like one of those like dollar razor subscription services.
Mm, I like that.
That's my only thought.
All right. You got anything,
Bob? Trying to figure out what Keaton means with what's in the chat right now, but we'll talk about that offline.
Dude, that was from a very long time ago in the podcast. And I'll be happy to explain it.
Good, because it's foul and ridiculous.
All right. Well, speaking of foul and ridiculous, this podcast will be with you again next week. Next week, we have a very exciting, very fun show for you. We are going to be previewing what we think the standings are going to be in each division, as well as our playoff teams, our MVPs, our Cy Youngs, and our Rookie of the Year award winners. So it's always a really fun show. Hope you'll be able to join us for that one and stick with us all season long. We do appreciate you guys listening. And if you like the show, please share it with a friend, family member, and get us into more ears. We always do appreciate that. And as always, you can follow us on Twitter. You can follow Bob at BobOsgood15, Keaton at The Spoken Keats, and me at DevJake. And we'll be with you again next week.